$507,000 in that account, 5% would yield $25,000 or so, far less than I would estimate that is really required to administer the second injury program. So unlike a lot of balances, it's difficult on this particular fund balance to assess a specific percentage, because the fund balance doesn't directly relate to the workload. It only reflects kind of a lag in the contribution rate, which in turn is set on the basis of the prior balance. So, Mr. Speaker, I really appreciate the remarks, and I sympathize with the need to cap or to limit, to scrutinize the administrative costs, but I'm a little leery that we may outfox ourselves on 5% and be back to somehow alter the statute again to when it comes into play in low balance years.
Representative Rieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Can we have a brief at ease, please?
House stand at ease.
Will the House come back to order?
That's 132.
Before the at ease, we're under debate on amendment number one, and I understand that there is an amendment to the amendment.
Thank you.
Representative Rieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the amendment to the amendment number one.
Hearing objection. Proceed to tell him what the amendment is, Representative Rieger.
Mr. Speaker, I didn't bother having it duplicated, but it is on the clerk's desk. This is just to technically make the amendment clearer, and what it does is on the third line where you see the total amount of the fund, the word of is deleted and in its stead is inserted paid from the fund. And then at the end of the line after the word fund, the two words each year are added. So the new language would read, administrative expenses shall not exceed 5% of the total amount paid from the fund each year. And Mr. Speaker, if I can continue just for a moment. I don't know if the amendment is the correct amendment or if 5% is the right number. This is just to make the amendment technically correct and then go back to debate on whether that's the appropriate change to the bill.
Are there any objections to the amendment to the amendment? Any objections? Hearing no objections, the amendment to amendment number one has been adopted. Representative Hudson.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, can we go back up to introduction of guests, please?
Are there any objections? Hearing none, proceed.
I'd like to introduce the body to my daughter, Kristen.
Any further guests for introduction? This brings us back to the debate on amendment number one. Any further debate? Ready for the question. The question is, shall amendment number one be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk locked the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Will the clerk tally the board?
21 yeas, 17 nays.
Amendment number one has been adopted. Does the clerk have any further amendments upon her desk?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Having no further amendments, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the Judiciary Committee substitute for House Bill number 177 as amended be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Are there any objection to the motion to advance from second to third reading? Hearing no objection, would the clerk please read the title of that bill?
Committee Substitute for House Bill 177, Judiciary, amended by the Judiciary Committee. An act relating to the Second Injury Fund and providing for an effective date.
Third reading, under debate. Ready for the question. Representative Collins.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I do have a question. I think I understand the change that was put in to Judiciary. I would appreciate it if someone who was the maker of that amendment in Judiciary would discuss the changes just so I can make sure I understand them. Thank you.
Representative Taylor.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I played some role in this, and I had come across a situation where people were being denied the opportunity to recoup against third-party negligent people the funds that had been paid in to the trust. And this amendment clears that up and makes it uniform with other procedures that are presently in the law. In other words, the insurance carrier pays in $10,000 upon the death into a second injury fund. And $10,000 is really not enough incentive for them to go back out and recoup those funds if there was a negligent third party involved. Frequently there are. And what happens is the entire rights under the case get assigned to that carrier. And if the carrier chooses not to go forward, basically that money is lost both to the carrier and to the family. So as a consequence, this cleans it up, allows basically the same procedures that are allowed in other very similar circumstances, and I think it's beneficial in the long run. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Any further debate? Ready for the question. Question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 177, judiciary amended, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? The clerk will lock the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
38 yeas, no nays.
Committee substitute for House Bill 177, judiciary amended, has passed the House. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There's an effective date clause. I move and ask unanimous consent that the vote on final passage of committee substitute for House Bill 177, judiciary amended, be considered the roll call on the effective date clause.
Are there any objection as to the adoption of the effective date clause? Hearing no objection, the effective date clause has been adopted. Representative Porchot.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to serve notice of reconsideration of my vote on CS for House Bill 177.
Notice of reconsideration has been given on House Bill 177.
This brings us down to unfinished business. Is there any unfinished business that come before this body?
Representative Adams.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. At this time, I'd like to bring up my reconsideration of notice on my vote on committee substitute for House Bill number 167, Judiciary, an act relating to mandatory use of safety devices in motor vehicles, please.
Would the clerk please read the title of that bill?
Call the House.
Okay. Committee. Call has been placed upon the House.
Committee substitute for House Bill 167, Judiciary, amended by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to mandatory use of safety devices in motor vehicles.
Okay. Third reading and under debate. Representative Adams.
Before I walked in, Mr. Speaker, somebody asked me how I was doing on the votes on this. If you got the votes, vote. If you don't have the votes, stand up and talk.
It's a good start.
You know, one of the things, if a person here can prove that wearing a seatbelt will save lives, you know, there's possibility that some of us can perhaps vote for this, even though I think it's an appropriate way of government to be involved in people's lives. I'm not convinced that seatbelts do always save lives. If you will consider some of the followings, that some of the states that had actually voted on these are now starting to repeal some of their mandatory seatbelt laws. They tell me that the law has not worked. And I don't know all the details on this, but I'll work on the interim on this. And I think that's significant. And do you know that the defense attorneys in states with mandatory seatbelt laws are arguing cases saying that people die in accidents because they are required to wear seatbelts? Not only are they using this particular line of defense, and they're winning cases with this line of defense. Because of the success of this, the success of the defense attorneys, I have been given a copy of a letter seeking funds to educate plaintiffs in order to educate them on this matter. So you see, it's not just the insurance company that will benefit from this bill. The lawyers will also. Lawyers, because they will litigate the pros and cons to death on this particular issue. Passage of this bill will increase the number of lawsuits, will further crowd court documents and ultimately increase costs to this particular state. And I am told there is evidence in certain accidents that if the person was not wearing seat belts, they would not have died. Such evidence is the main argument that the defense attorneys have and show why they are winning their cases. These particular facts lead me, Mr. Speaker, that this bill is not necessarily the lifesaver that its sponsors have led us to believe. And I don't mean to impugn the motives of the sponsors. Rather, I mean to point out that it's likely will not achieve its intended goals of saving lives. Because of this, and because I strongly believe that it is yet another example of how Big Brother government interferes in each of our lives. One of the things that we must remember, the major backer of this particular bill is the Seatbelt Council. The major fundraiser for the councils is people like Lee Iacocca and seatbelt manufacturers. The reason Mr. Iacocca is helping because he doesn't want the airbag requirements and other safety features. And the manufacturers are helping, obviously. They want to sell seatbelts. But I contend, Mr. Speaker, my reasons behind this is it's personal infringements on our individual rights. This is my main reason objecting to a bill like this. Not only that, it's an enforceable law. Should we be passing laws in this particular body that's enforceable, or working on the list of bills that we have listed before us, like crime bills, rather than something like this that's unenforceable? Mr. Speaker, today my vote will continue to be no vote. I don't question the ability of my voters to think for themselves. I don't question my voters the ability to use their best judgment. I don't question my voters to use their common sense on this seatbelts. People that vote for this bill, do you question the ability for your voters to think by themselves, have their judgment by themselves, or use their common sense by themselves? I'm going to object to this bill, Mr. Speaker. I think it's a poor bill, and I think we should be working on bills that have more relations and enforceable. Thank you.
Representative Boucher.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. First of all, I'd like to compliment those who have worked on the bill and are sincerely dedicated to the concept of saving human lives. I think it is a noble purpose. But I'm going to speak to 30 years of experience with the state of Alaska dealing with the federal government. Many of us have at one time or another fought the colonialistic approach that the people in Washington have toward our state. From statehood to D2 lands to the oil pipeline, we have been given statehood, but Uncle Sam still thinks that he needs to watch over us. And I think, to me, the philosophy of the legislation started out of the Department of Transportation. Then, like other things, there were a coalition formed in Washington, and then it began to roll across the country. And we are kind of on the far shores of this particular legislation. So I'm not going to argue the merits of whether it does or doesn't save lives. I think that's noble. You've got the argument from the guy who was in the Indianapolis race, whose car was disintegrated, and his quotes are, he said, it's bland busybodyism. Others talk about picking people up on the highways. But I want to talk to about a larger purpose, the right of this individual state and its citizens to make their own decision. Really, what we are passing here is another law today, and with every law, somebody loses their rights, their right of choice. But with this law, lots of people will lose their right of choice. And the my good friend from Kotzebue spoke about the laws that are languishing on the books. In other words, is this our first priority for saving human lives when we've got such bills that deal with homicide by abuse, conspiracy law, the rights of victims? My concern is for the overall philosophy of the right of this state to make its own decisions. I think if there had not been a federal law, this particular law would not have seen the light of day in the state of Alaska. But beyond that, I'd like to talk about our priorities, the priorities this body, which I'm a very proud member of. If we are in the business of saving lives, I suggest that we look at some of the bills that are languishing in our committee that will be truly of benefit to all the people of the state of Alaska, and give them equal priority with this particular piece of life-saving legislation that we're passing today. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Zawacki.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, thank you. As we all know, the bill probably, again, is unenforceable, and it probably won't be enforced. You know, when you're talking $15, it's very minor. Last week, I did raise up on this floor, and I did talk about the carnage that I've personally been involved with on the highway between Anchorage and Girdwood and several other highways, unfortunately. And some of those accidents, Mr. Speaker, were a direct result of an individual who was not wearing his seatbelt, who went out of control and hit another vehicle and killed other people. Those are facts in Alaska on the records, either killed or injured people. I will also, sometimes you have to hit home, about 5.5 years ago, my wife was in a serious accident when she had a head-on collision. And to this day, she and I and other people says the reason that she's alive today, thank God, is because she was wearing her seatbelt, because she would have been driven through the windshield. The facts are, you can look at facts on both sides, but there are overwhelming facts and statistics that says seatbelts do and have saved lives. And I said last week it would have been, you know, if it only saved one individual from being injured or one individual from being killed years ago or years ahead, I think that's what this bill is saying. Give those people the opportunity also.
Representative Collins.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. First, on the remarks to my colleague from my district, I too support those bills that he noted are languishing in committee, and I would suggest that he work within his organization to get those bills out if he's really interested in wanting to make them a priority. I would be happy to vote for those bills if they came out on the floor. It's really interesting how we as humans always work so hard to not to do things that are good for us. You know, we don't like eating our vitamins or eating our vegetables and watching our cholesterol, so it's not really surprising that we're not going to like having to wear seatbelts, which are probably going to help us out or have a better chance of helping us out than not helping us. People have talked a lot about an individual's right to decide whether or not they want to wear a seatbelt. But I can assure you, I spent a year at least working in an intensive care unit in Portland, Oregon. And the hospital at which I worked was the hospital which was most closely located to the freeway. And consequently, we got all of the highway victims were brought to us first. And I can tell you that that experience, not only there but in other institutions in which I've worked, is that so many times people would say, if only I had been wearing my seatbelt. And when you're sitting there at 1 o'clock in the morning trying to comfort a family, trying to comfort an individual who will never walk again, that right pales in its significance. I certainly hope that the second time around that the members of this House will push the right button to encourage people to do something that's good for them. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Springer.
I'm not going to argue about the merits of saving lives, but I want to point out is we're always blaming the federal government that they are making laws that are enforced in all 50 states. Doesn't make any difference if it's in Florida, in Hawaii, in the Midwest, or in Alaska. And we bitch a lot about it because a lot of those laws we are stuck with, and they are not applicable for us. Obviously, what's good for Florida is not necessarily good for Alaska. And we're doing the same thing here. If I would live in Anchorage, where all them crazy people are, and say drive like hell, I would not only be wearing a seatbelt, I'd take two mattresses in my car. And I go to a welding shop and get extra bumpers and all-around protection roll bars and everything, because that's the only way I survive driving in Anchorage. Now, we are not quite that nuts out in the sticks. We are pretty settled and considerate people, and we have completely different conditions. We don't have any four lanes. We got little one-mile spurs. They're so full of potholes, if you don't have a four-wheel drive, you ain't moving anyway. You're not moving at impact speed. You're pretty damn lucky if you get some snow drifts and everything, and you're moving at about 15 and 20 miles an hour. We also have a lot more of a settled, less nerve-wracking lifestyle. If we drive around on those few roads, we have different reasons. We are not trying to beat the three lanes going down Minnesota bypass, making it to work in time or something. We go out to pick berries or do a little road hunting for ptarmigan or collect driftwood or do some of those type of things. We ain't in any hurry. On top of it, it'd be pretty damn tough out there to comply with those laws. I think there's a lot of ignorance here and just lack of knowledge what it is like to live out in the weeds. There are no Lincolns or Cadillacs and all them high-speed rigs. There's some old pickup which is rattling around, probably got 18 kids in the rear, mama, papa, and the sled dogs for backup in the front. How in the hell are you going to strap all those people in and comply with the law? You ain't going to do it. So I just want to point out there are different conditions. Now, there are a couple other things I think that law is counterproductive to. Our majority leader yesterday or is going to introduce a law where we need organs. Now, there you go. We got a completely counterproductive law. So people flying through the windshield, they're going to be great organ donors. I think we should accept all those people. We're strapping pregnant women in the car. I've never been pregnant, so I don't know what it looks like. But I would suspect if you go on the Teller Highway from Nome to Teller, and you're strapped in and you're doing 40 miles an hour, I think you go in labor about by mile post 10. So I'm not trying to be really funny. I'm just trying to point out that the majority of the state, which is in the urban areas, are forcing us into doing something that's, number one, not enforceable. Number two, anybody with common sense is going to do anyway. Thank you.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I was going to try to remain seated during this whole thing, but really, this piece of legislation, I just really have problems with, and I just don't think it's necessary, and I don't think the people of the state of Alaska, for the most part, want it. If you really want to do something, you know, I had an amendment the other day that I didn't offer, but it had to do with a person that let's say, for example, they're going down the road, they had a helmet on, okay, full-face helmet, okay? Maybe they would opt to wear that rather than a seatbelt. Because as someone testified earlier, that many of the injuries that happen to people and kill people and put them in the hospital, et cetera, have to do with head injuries. So maybe helmets are good. Maybe they should be wearing helmets. Maybe we should legislate that. I think the statistics will show also, in the state of Alaska at least, that the accidents in rural Alaska are not near what they are, and the injuries, et cetera, that are sustained during an accident, are near what they are in some of the urban areas. So maybe you folks who live in the urban areas should buckle up. You know, what about, you know, really, and when you think about laws that we pass, why don't we pass laws that give an incentive to people? For example, someone gave an example of rolling through a stop sign, okay? So the trooper picks you up. You've gone through a stop sign, you didn't come to a complete stop, he picks you up, but you got your seatbelt on, and he forgives you. It's an incentive, right? It's a good incentive. How about if you're going down the road and you're going 58 miles an hour? and the speed limit's 55, and the trooper picks you up, okay, forgive you for it, right? Or if he just, at random, just stops and picks you up, and you've got your seatbelt on, you get 2 points added to your license, rather than taking any points away. You know, some incentives, folks, for people to buckle up. You know, there was a representative from Fairbanks that had a good idea on an incentive bill for people to buckle up. You know, I just think you're approaching this whole thing wrong. I don't think that, the majority of the urban people do need it and do want it, and maybe the majority of those people need the law. But we certainly don't need it out there, and it creates a lot of problems that are not necessary because, as been brought out before, many of our roads and many of our communities, we have speed limits that are 20 miles an hour, and in those roads, Chicken, for example, is a good example. I mean, unless they're going to Toke or something, but right around their community, how many roads are there? One and a half, driveway or two, a few mud holes. You know, I mean, it just really doesn't make sense. So I would hope that maybe we turn this thing around and send it back to its appropriate place.
Representative Sund.
Mr. Speaker, I'm in support of this legislation, but if you'll notice last time we had it up, and I've been very reluctant to get up and speak about this because last year I was heavily involved in the debate, and my seatmate, the representative who sat next to me, just disappeared. He didn't have his seatbelt on, fell completely out of his chair, and a few of those who are here recall got locked under his desk. And I've been hoping that I've been reluctant to get up because it may happen again. And I'm really glad that my seatmate here has still remained seated as I speak. Thank you.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd just like to say a few words to dispel an ugly rumor that this bill was not introduced as an incentive for the Oregon Toto legislation. And I'd also like to dispel the other rumor that this is not to put down a man we honored last year as a great American, Lee Iacocca. But just one final point, Mr. Speaker, and that is to emphasize something that we brought up on the debate last week, and that is that this has nothing whatever to do with the federal legislation, because the bill does not meet the federal standards. So whether or not we pass this particular bill, it'll have no effect at all on whether the federal airbag regulations go into effect. This is not the intent of the bill, and it doesn't meet that requirement. I'd like to read very briefly some statistics that shows just exactly what the bill will do in very practical effect. That a Michigan study found for people wearing seat belts, overall injuries were reduced by at least 50%. More specifically, in a frontal accident, fatal head injuries were decreased by 82%. Frontal chest injuries were decreased by 53%. Fatal neck injuries were decreased 100%. Likewise, in the frontal crash, seatbelt use would reduce serious injuries to the head by 71%, to the neck by 100%, to the chest by 26%. In rollovers, injuries to the head would decrease by 100%, injuries to the neck by 100%, injuries to the chest by 71%. When Australia passed its seatbelt law, decreased major eye injuries by 80%, face and chest injuries by 50%, and spinal cord injuries by 37%. Whether or not it saves lives, and I think the evidence shows that it does, the cost to society of maintaining somebody who's a paraplegic is immense. We have been talking about the catastrophic medical illness fund that has been eliminated from the budget, the prenatal care fund, the various funds, because we don't have the money to spend to support people for the rest of their lives, much as we would like to. This is something we can do to reduce governmental costs. And for that reason also, it's an important bill.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you. I just wondered if the previous speaker has any figures from rural Alaska, say Stony River or Marshall or Venati. Thank you.
Representative Collins.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. If there, some of those statistics are tied most likely with the urban statistics, because most people who incur a significant injury of any kind are brought to Anchorage for treatment, and therefore the diagnoses that would be coming out would be coming from probably Anchorage, from Providence, or from Humana Hospital. So those numbers are there. I have seen that those numbers. Because the member from Tok brought it up with regard to head injuries, I just wanted to make the point that in Alaska we are very fortunate to have probably one of the best neurosurgeons in the country. He specializes in head injuries, and just so that you all know, not only does he wear his seat belt, but he also wears a crash helmet. Thank you.
Representative Gull.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I learned a couple things from the debate today. One is that the representative from Nome is a hard act to follow, as you can see by the reaction of that. I learned another another thing today, which was that we're concerned with user fees and the cost of emergency medical services. And I was thinking a good way to help pay for emergency medical services would be to raise the liquor tax. Thank you.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The representative from District 10 raised the issue of the newer surgeon from Anchorage and the fact that he wore seat helmet or a helmet while he was driving around in his car. I'd like to tell the body why this newer surgeon wore or wears a helmet in his car. Mr. Speaker, a few years ago on Elmendorf, we had a neurosurgeon. That neurosurgeon, he had privileges at Providence Hospital for a while. And while he had privileges at that hospital, the other neurosurgeon drove around in his car with a helmet on. Just in case he had an accident, he wanted to make sure the other neurosurgeon didn't do surgery on him. Now, that's a fact. It's, yes, it's funny, but it is a fact. This neurosurgeon was then barred from Providence Hospital, but not before he had done an operation on one little boy on the wrong side of his head, not before he was finally kicked out of the military for his incompetence.
Any further? Oh, Representative.
I just wish to respond that we're obviously speaking about two different neurosurgeons. Thank you.
Ready for the question? The question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 167, Judiciary Amended, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk lock the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Representative Larson.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I'm from nay to yea.
From nay to yea. Does any other member wish to change his or her vote? Did the clerk tally the board?
Did he change?
No. Did some other member change their vote without
I went from yea to nay, but I'd done that, I thought, before the board closed.
Well, we'll leave it alone. Does any other member wish to change his or her vote? Did the clerk tally the board?
22 yeas, 16 nays.
Committee substitute for House Bill 167, Judiciary Amendment, has passed the House in reconsideration.
Yeah, after the roll has been locked, the only way that you may change your vote is by recognition of the chair and stating the change in that vote. So when the board is open for someone to vote, you may not unless you seek that recognition. Any further unfinished business? Representative Taylor.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to withdraw from consideration of the body House Concurrent Resolution Number 14, That was a resolution relating to funding, full funding for the police academy over in Sitka. That's now been taken care of by the budget process, and I'd like to thank all members for that consideration.
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, that bill is with a resolution is withdrawn from the roll. Any further unfinished business? This brings us to announcements of standing committees or special committees. Representative Davidson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to announce that the meeting of the House Special Committee on Foreign and Domestic Trade is canceled today, and we'll take up this topics next week. Thank you.
Representative Adams.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Finance will start at 2 p.m. with our calendar that we have scheduled today. Also, tomorrow I'll bring out a subcommittee, a couple bills, House Bill number 204. It's the school construction debt, House Bill number 41, oil and gas well data confidential bill. Thank you.
Representative Cato.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Transportation Committee will meet at 2 rather than 1:30 as scheduled.
Representative Cotton.
Speaker, at 5 o'clock in House Resources will be a subcommittee meeting on House Bill 289. The title of the bill is relating to state land.
Representative Sund.
Yeah, House Judiciary today will, I'll say we'll meet at 10 to 1, which usually means my members will show up at about, or 10 to 2, they'll get there about 2 o'clock. So it really is 2 o'clock, but try to be on time.
Representative Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The House Hess Committee will meet today at 3:30, and on our calendar will be House Bill 170 relating to the Public Employees Relations Act, House Bill 199, Tenure Rights and Non-Retention of Teachers, and House Resolution number 7 relating to a permanent funding source for EMS.
Okay. Representative Boyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Tomorrow at 5:30 in the House Finance Committee, I'll be chairing a Finance Subcommittee hearing on HB 130, that's the binding arbitration bill.
Representative Larson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. We're going to be having a subcommittee hearing on Wednesday at 4 o'clock in the House Finance Room. The two bills we want to be discussing at that time are House Bill number 220, which is a bill by the Rules Committee by request in relation to legislative per diem, and House Bill 294, which is a bill by the Rules Committee by request to the State Officers Compensation Commission in relation to compensation of legislators. So that's Wednesday, House Finance Room at 4 o'clock. For that subcommittee. Thank you.
Any further committee announcements? General announcements. Representative Kopanen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Tomorrow, House Majority Leader Max Grunberg will be the featured speaker at the Bill Egan Forum at noon in the Gold Room of the Baranoff Hotel. His topic will be a funny thing happened on the way to the House to the Majority Caucus. Attendance will be taken.
Mr. Minority Leader?
There'll be a minority caucus at 4:30 today in my office.
Any further announcements? Mr. Majority Leader?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just urge members to retain their packets on House Bill 156, Motor Vehicle Fuel Tax, and House Bill 177, Second Injury Fund. Those are available for reconsideration tomorrow. And also, we have an apology and a half birthday that was neglected over a month ago to my esteemed colleague across the aisle, the minority leader, Representative Pettyjohn.
Any further announcements? Representative Navarre?
Mr. Speaker, that would be the 1 month anniversary of the 12th. Birthdays.
And month. Could the House please stand at ease? No. All right. Special orders. Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent we stand adjournment until 10 a.m. tomorrow.
10 a.m.